This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Across Australia, on the Community Radio Network, to over 70 community radio stations around the nation. This is Word for Word, coming to you from Australia's first gay and lesbian radio station, Melbourne's Joy 94.9.
Hello and welcome to Word for Word. Thank you very much for joining us on this fine day. Dean Beck and Andrew Pryor are with you today. Now, Melbourne is the centre of female crime writers in the world. It's extraordinary. There are hundreds and hundreds of women who will be gathered together at the beginning of October to talk about writing about murderers, bank robbers, and criminals from around the world. And one of the women behind this festival of crime writing, the festival's called She Killed Her, which I think is very, very clever. She Killed Her is a women's crime writers festival, and we're joined by Lindy Cameron, who is part of the organising committee. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
And an author yourself.
I am, yes.
In fact, I'm looking at books that are rather chunky.
Chunky.
That's what is it? I mean, I always look at these big books and go, how many hours have been devoted in a dark, quiet room with a computer to put that together?
Well, it depends. Sometimes you can. Sometimes it can take, you know, a couple of years to write a small book, and sometimes you can knock a thick book out in 6 months.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Depends.
Is it about, we hear about runners getting in the zone and dancers getting in the zone. Is it the same for a writer?
It is. Yeah. It's quite like that. You know, it's sort of like pulling teeth. In the middle of a book is like pulling teeth. Uh-huh. The start, you're all enthusiastic and you've got a fabulous idea or you've got a contract that you've got to meet, and so you're sort of developing something. And the middle of it is literally like pulling teeth quite often, and then you get a run on at the end, and it's, you know, late nights and you can't stop, and and it's not just because you might have a deadline, you literally can't stop.
And you're getting more tired, but you can't stop because you don't want to lose that moment.
Is it like for some people that's what reading a book is like? You know,
yeah.
For some people the reading of the book can take forever, and then you get right to a certain part and just, oh, it's done, it's over, I've finished.
Yes, and it's kind of like that when you write it, and if you've taken, you know, however, whether it's 6 months or 6 years to write a book, and then, you know, someone, and you've deliberately made it a page-turning thing, and you know that someone's going to read it in a weekend. It's kind of like preparing a really elaborate meal and then it's over in half an hour.
Yeah.
Lindy, I've got a confession to make. I struggle to read fiction.
Really?
Big time. I can read a business book and love it. I can read a biography and love it. But I really struggle with fiction.
That's interesting. Mm. Is it a boy thing? Do you have trouble?
Look, no. I have a problem in finishing books that are fiction.
Through boredom? No.
I get so engrossed in it. And then I'm really, like, you know, missing train stops, forgetting to get off the train, not going to bed, that sort of thing. And really engrossed in it. And it takes me, if it's a fiction book, it takes me at least probably a month to read a book, if it's a fiction book. But whereas if it was an autobiography or a workbook or something like that, done in a week less.
Oh, I'm the reverse.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know why, because I'm a creative soul that thinks in outside the box in that realm, but I struggle so hard to get in the picture in the book.
Maybe you're reading the wrong books.
Maybe I am. Mm.
Are you reading literature or genre fiction?
Look, let me put it another way. My brother at age 10 could whiz through The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, but that's not an easy read.
Mm. I know. But, you know, it's 17, 18, I couldn't be less interested.
Yeah, well, it could be that you're reading the wrong things.
I know.
Crime fiction, page turning.
More interested in porn at that age, but that's another story. Now,
moving right along.
Why is it that Melbourne has become this extraordinary centre for women crime writers?
I don't actually know, but there's a hell of a lot of us in Melbourne. When and I don't think it's anything to do with Sisters in Crime, although I'd like to think it was. You know, we started Sisters in Crime and everyone gravitated here. But a lot of the authors who are coming along to the convention, and we've got about, we've got 65 guests, and about 50-something of them are actual authors, and the rest are crime specialists like forensic pathologists and lawyers and script writers for TV, that sort of thing. But a good percentage of them actually live in Melbourne or in Victoria. We don't have to fly too many in from interstate. I don't know what it is. It's like Victoria is the crime capital and Queensland seems to be the science fiction capital for women.
Right.
Yeah.
It can't be the easiest subject matter to be researching as well.
It is. It's very easy, actually.
Is it?
Yeah. Do you mean in terms of it being gruesome or in terms of...
Well, yeah, no, in terms of it being the contact matter, you know, the contact matter being a bit...
Well,
you know, I turn off at CSI and all those sort of things.
Oh, you wuss. See, I'm only speaking for women here, although I do know quite a few blokes who write crime too, and I don't know, you know, what draws them. It's the same thing would draw them to it. Mm-hmm. It's the whole thing about crime fiction is that it's not just the gore and the whatever. It's the story. And there's always a story in a crime novel. And the best way to introduce, a current topic, whether it might be gay rights or environmental issues or anything, political issues, anything like that, the absolute best way if you want to talk to people about it is in a crime novel. You try and put it in literature and people die of boredom in, you know, they won't finish the book, you know, because it's obvious that that's what it's about. But if you've got a crime novel where you've got a murder and that murder is has been generated or caused by... shonky business deals in the city. You know, you can be writing something that's recently happened in Melbourne, and cover it in a crime story, and you don't even know what you're reading at the time, but subliminally you have learnt all about shonky business dealings in the building industry.
And
or
you can
unionism.
Talk more freely, I imagine, in fiction because
of course.
You can actually use in non-fiction. I mean, you can use the real life scenario as and play it out exactly as it happened.
Yep.
Change all the names.
Absolutely.
And get away with it.
Yep.
If we did that on radio, we would be off air that quickly. It'd be ridiculous.
Yeah, but I can make things up. But I can make everything I make up, I can base on fact. Like my third lesbian crime novel was all about a gangland war between a couple of different families. And this was before the gangland war started in Melbourne. You know, I think I caused it. I'm not
Was it called
sure.
Deadly Dykes?
No, it should have been, shouldn't it?
When you've got multiple genres there, you've got gay fiction, you've got crime fiction. So does it appeal to everybody? Like, are you getting readers from that are just loving crime fiction they're
yeah.
reading the books, even
yeah.
though it's got a lesbian character?
Yeah, that's the interesting thing about it. I have actually know guys who have been quite straight guys who have enjoyed reading my lesbian crime novels. You know, I don't think it's just because there's, you know, sex scenes in it. I don't think that's what it is. I think that they just enjoy
no,
writing
because
crime.
Because they're lesbians and they're
yes,
straight guys.
Yeah.
Now,
but yeah, there's no the crossover
the crossover
doesn't. Yeah.
The idea of putting gay or lesbian characters into a crime fiction is often lambasted because it's too predictable, or maybe. We often hear in the community, oh, not another mass murdering poof, you know.
Yeah.
In a fictional story. But you don't shy away from it.
No, because I don't have mass murdering poofs. I have mass murdering straight people. and it's the lesbian who solves the crime.
Of course it is. And there's the edge.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. So I don't have gay characters who are, mm-hmm. you know, unlikable because, you know, in real life there are lots of them out there that we wouldn't like. We don't have to like them just because they're gay. So I have, you know, my aim when I set out to write my PI series was, A, to give Melbourne its own lesbian private eye, to give Australia its own lesbian private eye. When I first wrote the books, there wasn't any. And so that was my aim. It was also my aim to set a crime novel in contemporary Melbourne, because at the time in Melbourne we only had Kerry Greenwood's fabulous Phryne Fisher series, but they were set in 1928.
Of which the ABC, if I'm right, is currently filming
yes.
a series. And I have inside knowledge on that. between you and I.
Yeah.
It's extraordinary.
I would imagine it. The producers and the scriptwriter are,
are putting a lot of money into this one.
And they are some of the best in the country.
It's going worldwide.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And it's hot.
Yep. And it will be. It'll be fabulous.
Now, sorry to cut you off there, but now we're on it, I was going to bring it up anyway. Let's just talk about her extraordinary series and how that came about. And is the ultimate idea for you as an author to end up on TV or film?
Oh, absolutely.
Is that a name?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, these days you'd be crazy not to want the film deal, not to want the film deal even if you didn't get the film, because it's quite good money.
So let's take her, what was her name?
Kerry Greenwood.
Let's take her as the example in this case, as someone who has, as a local writer, written about one character and a series of events over a number of books that has then gone to that step. Let's talk about her process. Okay. Explain that for us.
Well, in Kerry's case, it's taken 20 years to get to that stage. She's just published her 20th Phryne Fisher novel.
Right.
And she helped launch a book for me last night, saying she's quite an extraordinary woman, really. She's only now, she says, getting used to being famous. But she is quite famous amongst crime fiction fans. She's famous in Australia. She is truly the only author in Australia who could be called the Queen of Crime. Right. Everyone else, sort of, as good as they might be, they pale into insignificance. Kerry has written 58 novels altogether.
And her books aren't just big here.
No, they're big everywhere. Yeah. They're sold in America, they're sold in England, they're sold, they're translated as well, I think. But and she's written 20 Phryne Fisher novels, and that's the series that's just been picked up by Deb Cox and Fiona Eager to produce for the ABC next year. And it will be absolutely fabulous, I just know. Kerry herself is supremely happy with I think it's Essie Davis who's been chosen to play Phryne. She was in Cloud Street. So Kerry
And doing an amazing job, I hear.
Yeah. And Kerry is perfectly happy with her as a choice for this character that she's been writing for 20 years. Kerry set out, she thought she'd write two books for that series. She just thought that would be all it went for.
She's not over it? She's not sick of it?
She's not sick of it at all.
But that must be tough too, because there's an expectation now.
Yeah, but she writes a Phryne book a year, and for the last 6 years she's also created a new character called Corinna Chapman, who is a contemporary character set in Melbourne, and she's a baker sleuth. So she's up to her sixth book in that series as well. So she does something else too,
Our guest is Lindy, I'll get it right, Cameron. She is with the Australian Women's Crime Writers Convention. Andrew, you were going to ask?
No, I was just going to ask, with that you're writing over 20 years, 20 books, and then you get this deal, is it hard to give it up? Like, surely you're giving up a much-loved character. Are you putting it in somebody else's hands?
I don't think she's giving it up. I think that from what I gather, the production company are being absolutely faithful as they can, as you can when you're filming a book.
Yep.
To the character, to the setting, obviously, with Melbourne in 1928.
From what I hear, they are... and they're putting a lot of money into the fine detail of this.
Yeah. And that's one thing that Australian production companies are very, very good at, we know, and that is period costume dramas. We are very, very good at them.
But we don't do a lot of them because they are very expensive to do.
But there was a time there when that's all we did, if you remember, about the 70s and 80s, that's all we were doing.
You look back at the likes of Rush, and those sorts of things, even in the late 70s.
Yeah.
They were extraordinary their time.
Yeah, yeah. Extraordinary. Yeah. And Deb Cox is, the scriptwriter. I think she's just one of the scriptwriters, but she's part of the production team as well. I mean, she's a
sea change.
Sea change, exactly. Yeah. Say no more. So, if you've got someone like Deb Cox on board as well as the scriptwriter, they will be extraordinary. I just know. As you say, relinquishing control. Kerry hasn't relinquished control. Mm-hmm. I think that the series will only enhance the sales that she has already earned over the past 20 years. And every time she brings out a new one, she might earn a new fan, and then those people go back and they start from the beginning. And there's nothing better as a reader to discover.
There's a particular quirkiness to the character in those books, and that is the one thing that has to translate in a script and then on screen. That's got to be tough to let go of for an author, who knows that character, of course.
Yeah.
But to then pass that on to someone and let
and
let
them
the
run
baby
with it.
Run. Yeah.
It's a bit. I mean, there's a similar thing that happened with Val McDermid, the British writer. She had a production company start filming her Wire in the Blood series, mm-hmm. and the production company promised her that they would be absolutely faithful to the characters and that they wouldn't like the two. There was a male and female character. They were never going to get it on in the books because they were too wrong for each other, and so they promised that wouldn't. Unlikely thing wouldn't happen in the TV series. The unfortunate thing that happened in their TV series is that the actress who played the main character after, I think it was three series, left.
Yeah.
So then they had to decide what to do. Do they replace character with a different actor, or do they introduce a different character? So in that instance, the TV series went that way with a new character, and Val continued to write the books in the other direction with the original characters. So they're... Yeah.
And I guess when you hand over a name and it becomes a franchise like that, after the first couple of series where they follow things religiously, it's understandable that they would take their own life.
Yeah.
So for you as a writer, and you've already admitted to us that, TV or film would be great to get, do you follow a character through all of your books, or do you write individual, self-contained novels that don't have a thread?
My first series was the Kid O'Malley Mysteries, and I've written three books in that series. It's unlikely I will go back to that series because it's been a while since I'd wrote the third book, so it kind of feels like it's complete to me. Mm-hmm. But so I had the same character, same main characters, same PI, Kid O'Malley, same... love interest, which was Alex Kazanov. Her best friends were the same. Her work contacts and colleagues were the same. But each book was self-contained. You could read it. Didn't matter if you read it out of order. Better to read it in order. But they were each self-contained stories. My latest book is the first in a new series with a kick-ass.
And you already know that.
Yeah, of course.
See, that's what gets me. How do they know that? I mean, as a writer, how do you know that?
Because I wrote it that way. I write it with a plan, that that's exactly what will happen.
That's got to be flexible, though, because you might have said, okay, this is going to be six books, but what if it becomes a TV series and it needs to be 18 books?
Well, keep writing.
You can be that flexible?
Yeah, well, as I said, Kerry started, she thought she had a two-book deal, and she thought that was going to be it, and 20 years later she's, just published the 20th. So,
the
and
flip side of that is, you've got a two book deal, and that was the idea. It goes off. You're then given a six book deal, and you go, hang on.
I don't know whether you're given a six book deal in Australia.
Whatever.
Yeah, I think that's that's the dream. It's a dream to get a six book deal, but Australia is so small that I would say most publishers will say, we'll give you another two book deal, and then we'll see how and it goes on and on. And 20 years later, she's done 20. With mine with my original series with HarperCollins here in Australia, I did my three one at a time. I didn't get a three book deal. I didn't even get a two book deal, but they accepted three of them. And they are now not published here in Australia, but they're published by a small lesbian press in America. They're available here, but they're published in America because that was the way it went. And it means that I'm available overseas, which I wasn't with
HarperCollins. An international book deal.
Yeah.
Just one of the topics that will be discussed at She Killed Her. It's the Australian Women's Crime Writers Convention. It is on from the 7th to the 9th of October. We're speaking with Lindy Cameron, author, international author, are we going to say now? You're listening to Word for Word across Australia on the Community Radio Network.
You are listening to Word for Word with Andrew Pryor and Dean Beck and our very special guest, Lindy Cameron.
You are on Word for Word. Lindy Cameron is not only a writer, published writer, but also a publisher herself. And Lindy, you've brought in a few books that one is your own, titled Redback, about a... Will you explain the plotline?
Okay. The main character is Bryn Gideon, and she's an ex-soldier who now leads for a private enterprise group, a group called the Redbacks, and they are retrieval agents. So they get hired by people who need... someone rescued from a hostage situation. All those stories you hear about people going lost in the jungle and hostages. It's her job to, go rescue them. So it's an action novel. It's the sort of novel that guys normally write, with lots of guns and helicopter explosions and all that sort of stuff. It's the movies that I love to watch and the books that I like to read too. So I figured, why not have a go, see if I can do it as good as the boys, but create the main character as a believable woman surrounded by a bunch of believable blokes as well.
So researching that, are you going out there meeting mercenaries
or
people that are going off and doing that job for a living now?
No, but I do wonder why the FBI didn't turn up on my doorstep, because I was researching the things that make fertilizer bombs. Not, I didn't want to make one. I just wanted to have the bare bones of what might be in one.
But they track that sort of stuff.
I know. If I try and go to America now, I think they're going to stop me at the borders. But the interesting thing was that I was also researching...
Just don't turn up in a hijab.
No.
Right.
No, that would be the end of it. I was researching... Apache helicopters, because I wanted to blow one up, and I thought, well, I need to find out about in the book, and so I did all this research on Apache helicopters, and then I fell so much in love with an Apache helicopter, I didn't want to blow the thing up in the end. it's stupid, isn't it? But the funniest thing was that I thought, okay, now where will I blow this Apache helicopter up? So I was Googling, and I wanted it to be an army base in America. Where it happened, and so I was Googling.
You are on the hit list.
I know. I was Googling, and on Google you can see all their forts. They're still called forts, Fort Dallas, Fort Hood, whatever. And I Googled, and so there I was Googling. I thought, well, that's a good one. That's around about the spot where I've got some of my other characters who live. So that's handy. Texas, that's good. Zero in on Fort Hood. They had Apache helicopters on the tarmac, and you could see them from Google.
Okay.
So then I did research.
See,
on
I thought
Fort Hood.
You'd zoom in, and all you would see is a big black spot that had been blacked out.
Yeah, part of Fort Hood is a big black spot, because what they do would do manoeuvres and they do practices and all
of
that.
And they do black it out.
And they do black it out. You can't see that on Google. But the rest of it, the actual army base, it's right next to a town, so it's right there. And all the buildings, the hangars, and there on the tarmac was rows and rows and rows of Apache. I think they're Apaches helicopters.
Doesn't matter. They are now.
Yeah, well, they are now.
Next time I'm bringing my Japanese tea in from Japan, I'm so making sure you're at the airport, going in right before me. They'll be spending all their time on you. Sir, you can just go through it. No problem, sir.
Oh, well, that must be fun.
It was. I loved it. I love doing the research for that book. And, I've got one of the main characters in it. The other main characters in it is an assassin. And he's going around sniping people he's been hired to kill. And he much prefers killing people, up close and personal, because then he can watch them die. He figures if he's got to kill them, then he should do the courtesy of letting them at least know what's going to happen.
So it comes from a respect thing.
Him. That weird honour thing thing. But a couple of people he's got to snipe from from a long way off. So I had to do research into sort of sniper type rifles and how far away, the longest shot has been, and then get him to match it.
But of course, when they are the FBI searching and looking into who you are and why you're researching things, then they'll come along and find that you're a lesbian crime writer.
Yeah, I mean, oh my God, that's the next best thing to, Osama bin Laden.
Definitely lock her up.
Yes, lock me up.
Is the lead woman in Redback that leads this rescue operation, is she a lesbian?
She is, but the nature of the book that it is an action novel. So there's not a lot of, time for internal reflection of that nature. But it is more subtext than anything else. There is another woman in there who is clearly, she rescues her at the start.
It certainly sounds like a movie.
Yeah.
Was that there at the original draft stage for you?
I think I write quite filmically.
I think there's a reason for that. in a perfect world.
Yeah, in a perfect world. But I mean, I'm a movie buff as well. So I've always written quite filmically accidentally. So this one I set out to make it as filmically as possible. Lots of blowing things up.
Who would you love as your lead woman for this?
Well, she's not Australian, sadly, but she could do Australian accent.
And we want Hollywood to take this on.
Yeah,
Australia could never afford this.
Lucy Lawless.
Oh.
Absolutely.
Nice choice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that works.
I was being a bit predictable. I was thinking Angelina Jolie.
No, that's my partner's dream.
What about Lucy Liu?
No.
Right, okay. So Redback is...
I love Lucy Liu, but she's not Bryn Gideon.
Lindy Cameron's one of her latest books is titled Redback. Now, let's have a look at some of the other things that you as a publisher have done lately. We were talking about Carrie Greenwood earlier and this series that she's doing with the ABC. there's another book where she's gone back in time to ancient Egypt, and the lead characters are gay men.
Yes.
Yeah. Tell us about this. Out of the Blackland is the story.
It's a wonderful, wonderful tale. It's set in the 18th dynasty, which is the time of Akhenaten and Nefertiti. Now, everyone, well, if you know anything about ancient Egypt, everyone knows Nefertiti, you know, the most beautiful woman in the world, according to that stone statue that was found, and Akhenaten. And between them, they tried to change, well, mostly Akhenaten. He was a lunatic, and he tried to change the wonderful pantheon of Egyptian gods down to one single god. He was the first person who tried to create a monotheism, a single god. Yep. His god was the sun. You know, he worshipped the sun. But he completely, in doing so, he completely ruined Egypt at the time. All the money that used to go to filling the storehouses and grains and with grain and all that sort of stuff was then built for, you know, a ridiculous religious purposes of worshipping the sun.
It was ploughed into that, right?
It was ploughed into that, and then they had, you know, the Nile didn't do what it was supposed to do that year, and it was just terrible. And he completely ignored the fact that there were enemies on all borders at that time. Always there were. So he wasn't, you know.
Was it a blind faith? It was on his behalf.
Like most faith is, and not nearly as interesting as, you know, a wonderful pantheon of gods, of, you know, jackal-headed gods and
Indeed, and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Much more interesting. So that's the overall setting, and a lot of people know a little bit about Akhenaten and Nefertiti, but the story is not from their point of view. It's just set then, and the main character Tahotep is a young scribe who, when we first meet him, he's actually making love with his young. He's a teenager. He's making love in the reeds with his fellow scribe, and they're clearly in love, and they talk about one day they will own a little hut by the Nile, and they will have a dog called Wolf, and that will be what they, you know, have when they've grown up. And then the next thing he knows, he gets tapped on the shoulder by Akhenaten himself and says, "I would like you to be my royal scribe." Just out of the blue like that. That's how nutty this guy was, because this was a boy that he was giving the job. Well, they were all very young. And so Tahotep became great royal scribe to Akhenaten. So that's where the connection is. That they are involved. He's involved in the story of Akhenaten and Nefertiti that closely. But the whole time he's just, you know, he's in love with this childhood friend. And the childhood friend gets assigned as the scribe to the young teenage general Horemheb, and he's 15. He's the leader of the entire Egyptian army at the age of 15 or 16, and so they get separated. And another main character in it is the little sister of Nefertiti. So we have two storylines going, so that we see the women's side of the story and Nefertiti's side of the story through her eyes. And of course, she becomes friends with Tahotep as well. And we see the sort of more masculine side of the story through Tahotep and his lover and the young general. And it's just an absolutely fabulous historical. It brings history to life because it's not concentrating on the big people.
And the inspiration for this was something that she had witnessed. Cary Greenwood had witnessed herself.
Yeah, she went to Egypt to research, because that's what she'd been doing research.
I think
for.
That's called a tax write off. But
but she'd gone to Egypt to do some research, and she'd already written a series of ancient Greek novels, and she saw a tomb painting of what was clearly a tomb of two young men making love in the reeds on a tomb painting. And she did some research and investigation and found out that that is exactly what it was, that it was a scribe and his male lover, and they had obviously been buried together, or at least, you know.
I wonder if we have that in our Aboriginal art.
Yeah,
anyway,
I don't know. And so she thought, she had Kerry has a very dear, several dear friends who are gay, but one in particular. And so she thought, I'm going to write this book for him, a book, an ancient a story set in ancient times, just to prove how long we have been around, in a sense, you know. Kerry herself is not gay, but she wrote it for Mark. In the back of her mind, that's the reason she was writing it. But out of that came the most extraordinary story. It is a beautiful book, and it is an extraordinary love story, because it's written as if it's just completely and utterly normal, because it would have been at the time. There was no stigma attached to it, no nothing. You know, in ancient Egypt, it was just one of the other things that was around. So
they were probably allowed to marry and have children.
Yeah,
and do all those sort of things.
All
you know,
those sorts
look
of
after
things.
People.
Surely not.
Yeah. Surely.
Cary Greenwood has written 41 novels.
No, 58 actually now. The count was, I know that's only last year.
This was only published last year.
Yeah, the count was wrong last year. It's actually 58. She's extraordinary.
Cary Greenwood has written 58 novels, 6 non-fiction books or more, and has worked as a folk singer, a translator, a costume maker, an editor. She's also a qualified solicitor. And it says here on the back cover, Cary is not married, but lives with an accredited wizard and 2 cats, Monsignor and Belladonna. In her spare time, she stares blankly out of the window and has no idea where her ideas come from. The book is titled Out of the Black Land. It's published by Clandestine Press. And, of course, that is the business run by Lindy Cameron, who is our guest. Lindy, as a publisher, that search for the next big thing is always in your mind, sure.
Yes, yes.
Even where you make your money, really.
Well, I mean, I've only been a publisher for 12 months. And
jeez, you've already done all right for that.
This is in all of them. I've got 9. By the first weekend of October, when Shekilda is on, I will have published 9 books.
Yeah.
And the latest bunch are mostly crime.
Now, of course, for a writer, they have got, you know, that search for a publisher to take on the work is always the big thing.
Oh, yes, yeah.
What do you look for in a book as a publisher? Because you're on the other side of it, and I'm sure this is part of what forms the Shekilda Crime Writers Festival, is writers searching for the elusive publisher.
As a writer who became a publisher, I wanted to create a publishing company that published the sort of books that I liked.
That's a self-indulgence that doesn't always pay.
I know, but that might sound quite limiting, but it wasn't, because what Clandestine Press is a genre publisher. I don't publish literature. Mm-hmm. I am looking for crime fiction, horror, fantasy, sci-fi, urban fantasy, historical fiction, everything that sells, literally. Uh-huh. I mean, you know,
okay,
it is
fair enough. Yeah.
Genre fiction is mainstream. I don't care what anyone says. Genre fiction is what people buy. Genre fiction is what people enjoy.
And by that you mean segmented into those categories.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So, you know, you'll find crime lovers who only read crime and nothing else, but I've found that a lot of people who read genre fiction read in the different genres as well. So
they want sci-fi crime or period crime or Egyptian crime.
Yes, exactly.
Lesbian crime.
Or lesbian crime. Oh, no, that's always been. That's always been.
And often written by historically, straights.
Yes, it's weird.
You're setting up this publishing house. What's with all the technology? You've got the iPads and all of those sort of the Kindles thing. You know, so many people are reading in different forms now. They're even writing in different forms.
Yeah.
You mentioned about writing through Facebook and things like that. So how is that changing for the publishing world, what you do?
Well, and probably in the last 12 months you've heard all these things, this stupid minister for something or other saying bookshops were dying. I mean, that man deserved to have his throat ripped out, literally, by a crime writer. That's a good one for
it's
the
a good
next
book.
That is the personal opinion of our guest, Lindy Cameron.
Yeah. well, you know, when Borders closed down, oh my God, it's the death of the bookshop. I mean, Borders were their own worst enemy. They were overcharging. They were, you know, all that sort of stuff. So, and Borders, when Borders first opened, the story was Borders was going to be the death of the little bookshop. And some may have closed down because of it. So, but the thing is, now that a huge entity like Borders have gone, little bookshops will come back into the force, I think.
I also think no matter what competition arrives into a space, let's call this one bookshops, good business will always win.
Absolutely.
Right? So no matter who comes in, it means you've got to pull your socks up and smarten up.
Yep.
And it probably cleaned out a lot of crap along the way. But those bookshops that remained are loved by their community.
Absolutely. And if you were to open a bookshop, especially if it had a coffee shop in it, just hint out there, in a place that there hadn't been one before, you'd have to do, obviously, you've got to do your research to make sure.
And you've got to make good coffee.
And you've got to make good coffee.
But
you make good coffee
business.
And have good books, then it'll be a great business. And it's the same with publishing. A lot of the big publishers were freaking out about Kindles and e-readers. Mm. And, oh, my God, it's the death of the book. It isn't the death of the book. If you've got 20-somethings spending their entire life on an iPhone, and you can get them to read a book on an iPhone, then one day they might actually buy a book as well.
Yep.
And as an independent publisher, a small independent publisher, I'm publishing paperbacks, and the ebook version is coming out at the same time. Because it'd be crazy not to.
Well, and surely the cost. I mean, you don't have to pay for the actual physical book.
No.
There, and all you're paying for is to be downloaded, that cost has got to go straight back to the publishing house.
Yeah.
Surely it's a, a better profit
margin. It is. It's a win-win. I mean, obviously, you don't charge nearly as much for an e-book as you do for a paperback. And I try to price my paperbacks within a good price range and a psychological price range. Like mine are $29.95. You know, I won't go over the 30. I won't charge $32 but for the smaller books, you know, $24.95.
There's a cost of having a book sit on the shelf of a bookshop for 6 months too.
Yeah.
And that's got to be factored in.
Yeah.
And that doesn't exist with an e-book either.
No. Yeah. They just live out there. And the good thing for instance, for Australian authors is that until you get picked up by an international publisher, as well as your Australian publisher, you are only available here, Australia and New Zealand. So as a small independent publisher, my authors are only available in Australia and New Zealand.
There's a funny thing about territories, isn't there?
Oh, I know, it's crazy. I don't know what it is. Yeah. I don't know why it works the way it does. But, I mean, it would be very difficult for a small Australian publisher to find a distributor in America, even if they were going to take you on. But the bonus with ebooks is I publish my book here in Australia. I publish Redback, I publish Kerry's Out of the Black Land and Arabella Candelabra. I publish them here as paperbacks so people can buy the physical one. They can buy the physical one from America through the website as well. But by turning them into ebooks, they're not only available on the Mobi things and whatever you can get here, I don't know what they're called, but I've Kindleized them, or whatever the verb for that would be, and they're available on Amazon. So my authors are
international
by virtue of the ebook, and that cannot be any better for them and for me as a publisher.
Our guest is Lindy Cameron. She's a writer, publisher, and she's also a part of the Australian Women Crime Writers Convention. It's on from the 7th to the 9th of October. It's called She Killed Her. You're with Dean Beck and Andrew Pryor across Australia on the Community Radio Network. Across Australia on the Community Radio Network, this is Word for Word. You're with Dean Beck and Andrew Pryor. Our special guest is Lindy Cameron. She's part of She Killed Her. It's all about women's crime writers here in Australia, here in Melbourne, and there are lots of them. Over 500 women will get together and talk about crime. And you get experts in, don't you, Lindy, to talk about it?
We do. Well, we've got about 50 or so, I've lost track. There's about 65 panellists altogether for the entire weekend.
How do you find these people? Because they tend to be very private, don't they? Like the top forensic psychiatrist in the, I don't know, world or the... how do you find them?
Well, Sisters in Crime, the organisation that is running She Killed Her, Sisters in Crime has been going for 20 years, which is the reason for the convention. And the membership of Sisters in Crime are mostly readers of crime fiction, because there aren't 500 crime writers in the country. There are about 100 maybe working crime writers in the country.
So it's an opportunity for the...
fans.
Customer, the consumer.
Yeah, absolutely.
To connect with the inspiration behind these things.
Absolutely. Yeah. The idea of She Killed Her is for the fans of Kerry Greenwood, of Lindy Cameron, of Lee Redhead, of Philippa Martin, of Alex Palmer, to come and mingle and meet, to listen to what they have to say on a variety of topics, from anything from, you know, how they research their books to the future of publishing as they see it. We're having one panel with the fabulous Tara Moss hosting it.
She's extraordinary.
She is. And she's chairing one panel with a group of writing mothers. Now, that might sound really weird, but of course, you know, women being women, some of them are mothers.
Quite a lot.
Yes. Funny that. Even some of the gay ones are mothers, but a lot of the straight ones certainly are. So, and there's been a little burst in the last couple of years of crime writers who have become mothers. And so this panel, I know it's weird.
Crime writers who become mothers.
So, oh my God! I know. So their career as an author was already on the go, and then they've become mothers, and so their whole writing experience will be changed by the simple fact that they have short people around,
of course,
that they have to tend to and look after. And of course, there are other women on this panel who were writers, who were mothers first, and are now. Like the author of that book.
AK Works.
Yeah.
Now,
Rocks,
this is... Rocks. Why did I say Works?
Dyslexia.
I am. Yeah. Yes. Ian Deck speaking. Arabella candelabra and the quest for all things to end. The questy thing, I can't read. The questy thing to end all questy things is a fantasy.
It's a fantasy, yeah.
But it's a bizarre fantasy.
Yeah, it's
and
a
this
comic.
Was launched the other night.
It was launched last night, yeah. It's a spoof. It's a fairy tale for adults. It looks like it should be a book for children. It is not for children. Do not let children read it.
And this is the book. This is the book that we mentioned before that started through Facebook.
Yeah,
is
yeah.
That right?
The author, AK Rocks, is actually two women, Amanda Wrangles and Kylie Fox, who, although they live around the corner from each other, spend a lot of time, extra time, talking to each other on the phone and via Facebook. And as a writing exercise, it originally started as a writing exercise, they were just trying to get their juices flowing by writing crazy stuff.
And this book is the result.
And this book is the result, because the crazy stuff we realised as a group, because we belong to the same writers group, we realised as a group that the crazy stuff was very funny, and that if it had a proper storyline, that it could be a book. And so they changed the way that they were writing it in their heads to for it to be a beginning, middle, and an end, first part of a first book of five in a trilogy, that kind of thing. But it's hysterical. It's full of pop culture references. It's full of all the things that they love as children and as grown-ups with children, any fairy tale, any quest thing that you've ever read. And it's a send-up, it's a spoof, but it's done with absolute love and affection.
By now, the unicorns were milling around the outside, awaiting their orders and somewhat perplexed by what was transpiring behind the closed doors. There were far too many oohs and ahs for everything to be as it should be. Writing can take many forms, and in this case, the modern expression of writing was the medium by which it transpired and evolved. We sometimes get really hung up on language and literature, but what we don't realise is that it's always been an evolving thing.
Yeah, and it's always been about story.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if you don't have a decent story...
Once upon a time, it was in pictures.
Exactly. Once upon a time, yes. And that's what this book... It's a spoof on fairy tales, but it's for grown-ups, because the two main characters, Arabella Candelabra, who is the chosen one, and who gets joined by a band of trusty followers, Lord Langley Kilkenny, the Beastmaster, who just spends his whole time in a loincloth, Gary, the very wise wizard, and Prince Jim, the very, very fey fairy prince. So Prince Jim has the hots for Langley. Langley has the hots for Arabella. Arabella and Langley get it on. Arabella later meets Aphrodisia, the faraway tree nympho.
You had me at Beastmaster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But for the women out there, Aphrodisia, the faraway tree nympho. So there are various combinations of straight, fairy, wizardy sex. It's wonderful.
Can I have that copy of that book?
We might negotiate that. Now, the She Killed Her 2011 Australian Women Crime Writers Convention is on from October the 7th through to the 9th, and you can find out more information regarding it by going to
www.shekilda.com.au.
That's the one. She Killed Her, like St Kilda, but it's She Killed Her.
She Killed Her, exactly.
.com.au.
And we have, as I said, we have 65 panellists. I was saying before, Sisters in Crime, in the 20 years that we've been going, a goodly proportion of our members are lawyers and judges and forensic pathologists and people like that. So we have no trouble finding them.
You know what? I've got a bit of a theory on this. If you're a policeman and you dress up in your policeman's outfit to get off, it's a bit wrong. If you're a doctor and you play doctors and nurses at home, I think that's a bit wrong too. I'm not saying anything. I'm just letting you know. She Killed Her, the Crime Writers Festival for Women, is on from October the 7th to the 9th. And yep. Our very special guest has been Lindy Cameron, publisher, writer, and you are fabulous. We want to have you back another time.
Thank you. I'd love to come
Thanks
back.
Thanks for joining us, Lindy.
Thank you.
There will be a podcast of this interview available for download from Joy's website, joy.org.au. And if you'd like to correspond with the program, please do so. Send us an email, wordforword@joy.org.au. I'm Dean Beck.
And I'm Andrew Pryor.
Till next time, you keep well, take care, and bye for now.
Word for Word is produced by Robert Briley from Australia's first gay and lesbian radio station, Melbourne's Joy 94.9. Word for Word is made possible thanks to funding provided by the Community Broadcasting Foundation and is distributed nationally to over 70 radio stations in the Community Radio Network.
is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.